bum 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 bum. In honor of Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire, in theaters this weekend, what is your all-time favorite giant monster movie?
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm going with the ending of Wreck-It Ralph 2, because what are the giant monsters if not the physical manifestations of our deepest insecurities, right?
I am Matt Patches, and my favorite giant monster movie is also one of the best movies to watch with toddlers. It's called Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, because the kid is big, and kids love giant kids.
No,
a Hotel
nap.
Had a guitar.
No,
he played that guitar.
Nap.
Hey, it's me, Dave, semicolon with a seven. It varies, but this week I'm singing the praises of the ridiculous and ridiculously fun Godzilla vs. Hedorah, which I also learned is Nicolas Cage's favorite Godzilla movie this week.
This is a Godzilla vs. Hedorah, which is a movie I would watch. I'm David Ehrlich, and I don't think I have the energy to be as creative as at least Katie and Patches were. So in lieu of the obviousness of just going with Ishiro Honda's original Godzilla, I will continue stumping for Gareth Edwards' 2014 Godzilla, which with every subsequent Godzilla movie I see, or at least of the MonsterVerse variety, seems that much better in hindsight.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room. It's episode 468. It is the week of Wednesday, March 27th. That was the day that in 1952, Saint in the Rain premiered at Radio City Music Hall. It was there to usher in April showers with all that rain. That's why it had a March premiere. That tracks, right?
What's the best musical number in Singing in the Rain? Is it actually the Singing in the Rain part?
No, it's Moses Supposes.
No, it's Make Him Laugh.
I mean, yeah, Make It.
Yeah.
Moses Supposes I like because it's like a fun friend thing. Make Him Laugh is an incredible, like, virtuoso one man thing. But Moses Supposes is like, let's fuck with the teacher. Kind of has like an anarchy to it. I like it.
Make him laugh. I understand why that's Dave's favorite. It's basically John Wick.
I've temporarily forgotten that there is any other musical that has ever existed besides Encanto, which is currently.
Encanto.
My son has been so Encanto pilled all of a sudden.
We should have made Encanto a segment on the show. Oh my
Encanto
God.
Encanto cool now, I assume.
Wait, David. Yeah. Quick take, Encanto good?
Oh, I think Encanto's great. I mean, I'll make this a quick take. What I realized is that Frozen is just so bad that it put me off of an entire generation of Disney's animated films, as if I wasn't already put off by the animation style. But Frozen really, other than a couple key power ballads, represents the worst of those films. It's the ugliest, it's the most basic, it's the most retrograde. And it was blinding me to, or preventing me from really having reason to check out, which I didn't before I had kids. The genius of the two Lin-Manuel Miranda movies.
Ehrlich loves woke Disney.
Yeah, I mean,
Ehrlich says white people boring and wrote.
I mean, hey, if the shoe fits, these Moana and Encanto are just like so. They're so good. They're so interesting. The music is brilliant and complex, and they don't look like dog shit. There's a lot going on. I mean, there's just a lot to love in those movies, and it's a shame that era already feels like a thing of the past, because post-COVID Disney is, I mean, even as we'll see with Moana 2, which is being cobbled together from episodes of a Disney Plus show and does not have Lin-Manuel Miranda's involvement, and as we saw recently in Wish, that golden hour only lasted so long.
I have two things to say. The first is that this reminds me so much of when David resisted Hamilton for months and months, even when we were like, hey, Hamilton's good. And then David saw Hamilton. He was like, Hamilton's good. It's like, aha. That's right. It comes for you eventually. The other thing is that in the car on the trip we just took, the kids asked to listen to the Wish soundtrack, which I had not encountered since we saw it. And boy, those songs are terrible.
No,
so
they're not.
Much worse than
I'm
Arrow.
Ready. I am reversed here. That five out of the six main songs in Wish are good. Maybe because I've heard them 8,000 times. The bad one is their Rise Up anthem.
Oh. The one where they sing, I promise, as one does, I will protect you at all costs is bad. You cannot defend that song.
No, Chris Pine, good. Chris Pine, good singer.
Still the best Chris, but still.
We're way off track here. Encanto, really, good. Wish, bad.
Moana, great. Limo Miranda, write more Disney musicals. Dave's here.
Yeah,
hey,
I'm back.
Yeah, we really
We'll talk about why this episode.
We're going to get the spotlight on Dave later. He is here for
Flynn
now.
Lives.
Flynn lives. But for now, we have reviews. So we put the spotlight back on David before we talk about
it.
Well,
I think I only see one new one. We read this one.
All right, I might have mistaken the counting.
Yeah, Dave, I don't know why you weren't on top of things this week, but it's really shameful for you.
It's my bad.
Purpose.
We didn't read any email while you were gone, Dave. We did hold those for you.
Purposely Gentle says, "Oh no, Dave Seven. Feel better, bud. We love you. Ehrlich," misspelled my name. "If you read this out loud on the podcast, don't say that sarcastically, please." I'm just trying to, how would I say "feel better, bud, we love you" sarcastically?
Feel better, bud, we love you.
I mean, and the better question is why. Like, it would just be me explicitly praying for Dave to feel ill and or die.
Yeah, I mean, I think your emotions are close enough to the surface on this. We know you do not want Dave to feel ill or die.
I mean, I'm holding my cards close to my chest, but I wasn't certainly going to betray that feeling in this review segment.
We do, though. If we love the emails, or I'm sorry, the reviews in the Apple Podcast app, but we also have an email, fitwr.podcast@gmail.com. We do have some a while ago, because I'm the one who usually reads them and was not here last week, so let's catch up on some stuff. This first one is subject listener email question. Doesn't explain much, but we'll find out. "Hi, Fitwear Gang. I've been listening to your podcast for about a month. I wanted to ask, has the online film discourse overshadowed professional reviews? Young people aren't reading long articles, so they would be getting their opinions through quote-unquote armchair critics on Twitter/X and or TikTok. Anytime a movie gets good buzz, people start to personally attack the reviewers when they disagree with them. They also go scorched earth when the bad movie gets challenged. So something like Fair Play and Maestro versus Bohemian Rhapsody. So are professional film reviews losing their importance to the algorithms because there's a lot of unfair backlash that the critics are getting? I ask as a staunch defender of Ad Astra, which critics adored, but audiences hated on Rotten Tomatoes. Thanks, listener number 27. That's how they want to be identified."
I think this person answered their own question. The answer is definitely.
Yeah.
But I would disagree. backed up by...
I feel like you legally have.
By the traffic data from the work that I do, but...
It's true.
I don't think you should use that as your metric for culture. And I'm not saying that your traffic is bad. I'm saying I don't think...
I mean, like, listen...
Mass culture.
Yes, generally speaking, of course, it is not even worth discussing, of course. At large, the algorithms, the Rotten Tomato scores of the world, gestalt opinion forming and Reddits and Twitter threads and whatnot has taken over. However, that critical, like the reaction, that reactionary opinion all has to stem back from some sort of critical discourse to begin with. And like that is where the reviews come in. If I am being attacked for a review, people are reading that review and they're engaging with it. I don't have to appreciate the quality of the discourse.
Needs to come from critics. It can come from people who are critical. It can come from Letterboxd people. It can come from people who comment on movies on social media or in Discord. You know, if there's commanding forces there, like people are. I mean, podcast reviewers probably have more weight at the moment than print.
But
critics.
Are any of those people as capable of making people lose their minds as David is when he gives Dune 2 a bad review?
But this is a really big can of worms. When Patches is going to say something about like the influence of YouTube critics over film critics, like, the influence on whom? I mean, the influence on people who spend their hours watching YouTube, sure. But the people who actually...
Mass culture.
Right, right.
Mass
but
culture.
The people who give a shit about film, work in the film industry, you actually shape the discourse and the kinds of movies that are being made. I mean, no, I think there's no argument that YouTube film criticism has greater weight than written film criticism. And I think that will continue for some time just because everybody's a critic, that only puts more of a focus on the people who do it with any sort of rigor. But yeah, I mean, I think that my opposite of galaxy brain, my very basic brain reductive take on this is that the internet is a reactionary place. And people will generate opinions left and right, but they typically need something to set them off. They need powder, you know, they need a spark for their powder keg. They need something to be responding to. And that is a role that critics, and I'm talking really about, like, you know, critics who's works in the trenches, who report from festivals, who are really the first line of defense when it comes to these new movies. They still have that role to play. And I think that is borne out by the interest that the reviews accrue on aggregators and whatnot.
But there is a greater threat, and to all of us, to everything, and to just like the way of life that all of us know, even as people experiencing it, which is that the platforms are changing. Like, the distribution methods are changing. It's not that critics should be less influential. They just will be because of their platforms and the availability and the interest in traditional platforms. I think that's going away, breaking. This is a question more about, like, can Google put film reviews in front of people anymore at a certain point, rather than is criticism useful to different types of viewers who may dismiss establishment critics. I think we're talking about, like, a technology question more than anything, and that is a huge can of worms. We should definitely move on to the rest of our show, but we should talk about this more at some point.
Because what you're saying is Fighting in the War Room needs a TikTok account.
Yeah.
Who's going to be on it? You're going to be on it?
It's going to be David as he appears.
I'm the most photogenic of all of us. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think TikTok is any more stable or future proof than anything else.
Oh, definitely.
But I think I take what Patch's point, what he's saying about, like, the shifting sands of platforms and how, you know, there is no longer a centralized place for people to digest criticism and to engage with it. And part of the critic's role is going to be have to stake out a claim somewhere and you know, be fluid and follow where the spaces lead. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't think it's a lack of interest in film criticism that is contributing to why that is being so destabilized. I mean, the fact that publishers are bought up by VC money that have no interest in or finding, like, a viable financial model is not a reflection of film critics.
We're talking about Katie next.
Right. Okay. Or the interest in artwork.
No one has bought me by venture capital.
We'll probably be returning to this forever and ever until the criticism falls down. But hopefully we answered some of your questions there. Let's sure 27. This next email is titled 6 Degrees. It's from Josh. They are the ones who have the Fighting in the War Room canon movie control
yes,
over our Letterboxd
still
list.
Still at it.
But this is not about that. This is instead called 6 Degrees. It says, "Hey, amazing hosts, you all didn't finish the 6 Degrees of Mary Steenburgen to Emily Blunt. Gonna drive me bonkers unless it's finished. You guys were so close. Steenburgen is an elf with stepbrothers with Will Ferrell. Ferrell's in Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back with Matt Damon. Damon is in Oppenheimer and the Adjustment Bureau with Emily Blunt." Okay, few got that off my chest.
I swear we did that.
Wow.
I mean, we might have, but it was weeks ago, and we're catching up.
I don't think we finished it. Someone did it. I can't imagine us getting off track.
I think someone tweeted at us a shorter way of doing it, which is Melvin and Howard, Robards, Magnolia, Tom Cruise, Edge of Tomorrow, Blunt. Who's playing? Who's? If maybe you did it at home, congratulations. We should do that again.
Well done.
This next one, the subject is not talking about Shrek just yet. "Hello, Fitwer. Happy to be writing this email, which I have been procrastinating for a while now. I followed David Ehrlich from Blank Check to this podcast, though to be honest, I think I started listening to Blank Check because of David, so who knows what came first. I used to only tune in when you guys discussed something I was familiar with, but now I catch every episode every week. Yours is the only podcast I do this for, no matter the topic. And you all do really talk about whatever sometimes. David, I like the no-nonsense self-assuredness you give off when discussing your opinions. I also find you to be an excellent writer. Your film criticism is some I repeatedly go back to, but I doubly like you on the podcast.
When is this going to go off the rails?
You come across as a sweet, self-depreciating dad type that likes reality TV. What's not to like?
Dad type.
And aside, I'm South Asian and thus heard of the movie Bahubali when it first came out, but wrote it off at the time because I thought it looked stupid. Cut to a few years later when I saw that you liked the movie and decided to watch it. And oh my God, that movie fucks so hard. David Ehrlich, truly a white man I can trust. Mr. Patches, you have grown on me a lot in the couple of years I've been listening to the pod. The way you energetically but also frantically ask questions. Do kids like this? Are movies dead? What does any of this mean?
I wish this listener could hear me. What Matt Patches was freaking out about as we prepared to record tonight.
I think they'll hear it again.
Yeah, we'll get there. While I don't always agree with the takes, I am always very gratified when we do align. I also found your story about getting involved with your child's play very touching, and I appreciate how much you genuinely seem to care about the next generation's engagement with art. Katie, I appreciate your discerning taste and specificity of perspective. I really do listen to you when you suggest movies because it's often not something I would have come across otherwise. I love to rattle off your award show insights to my friends and coworkers to make myself sound smarter. I also love that you seem like you're good at your job. Not that the other hosts aren't also, but it does seem to radiate specifically off you.
About that.
Katie is good at her job.
But, and there's some people who can stand to hear that information.
But, and I could be mistaken, I think you once said that Kate and Leopold was a good rom-com, so I watched it and was bewildered by that ending. Like, spoilers for that movie, but she went back in time after she got her dream job? The fuck? Unforgivable.
I don't think I've ever seen Kate and Leopold. If I somehow wound up recommending it as a rom-com, maybe I meant Serendipity, which I do think is a good rom-com.
Those movies have so much in common.
If I did this, I am truly sorry. Maybe I should watch Kate and Leopold to atone for my sins. Sorry, I cut off this review.
David the Seven, shout out to you for editing the pod and holding things down. Truly the real MVP. Cue your signature, excited. Yeah! I always look forward to hearing you distill how you feel about a certain film or piece of media in a concise and clear way in that great husky podcast voice of yours. Awesome. Also, can I just say that you seem like a chill guy leading a chill life, and I find it kind of aspirational. I also recently started to listen to Trial by Content, and I'm digging it. Wonder if you would share your thoughts on the new live-action Avatar TV show if you've seen it. I haven't yet. I'm saving it because I was waiting for the final pickup, but now that I know I have to watch it, I'm going to catch up. And I might have a whole bunch of time, as we'll talk about later in this episode. Other random thoughts. I'm 26 years old, and your podcast gives me a lot of insight into young parents' lives. I work with young parents and often draw upon your discussions for conversation inspiration, even referencing Bluey despite having never watched it myself. It's like being a cultural spy. Have you guys ever talked about how you met and decided to do this podcast? If so, would love to know which episode. Truly, I would give you guys money. Arena.
Give us money. No. how did we start doing this?
We have talked about this at some point. We don't really know the answer also.
The only way to find out how we started is to go back and listen to every single episode from the beginning. And then tell us.
Which is somewhat possible. Yeah. Go down that rabbit hole as far as you can and then join the people who email me every once in a while being like, Dave, I know you have all the op keynotes. Where can I get that? But I'm like, I'll get there.
You can only download those off Kazaa.
back in the day. This last one is the subject is Fitwear Pantheon, and it is from Jeff, who says, I'm messaging you from the past, the February 14th episode. So this might be irrelevant at this point, but I have a few movies that I think should be added to the Pantheon. One, Cars. Remember when David used to sign off every podcast with ka-chow?
Sure do.
Two, Paddington 2. Three, Titanic. Four, Tree of Life. It's like a poem.
Fuck.
Five, that live-action Smurfs movie that Patches likes. Or was it Alvin and the Chipmunks?
I was either just way. On the Box Office Mojo page for the Smurfs 2011. Today.
Did you go to the set of the Smurfs 2011? Someone did.
I did, because it was shooting there in New York. But I want to say that the reason... you know what? Tune into our mini-segment to find out why I was on the Smurfs page.
Six, Magic Mike XXL. Also, it's all of your fault that I'm playing Marvel Snap and has wasted so much of my time, but I wanted to share my current decks with you all. Been alternating between an Apocalypse deck and a Phoenix Move deck.
Don't even tell David this. Please don't open
it. I mean,
don't go there.
I have a lot of comments.
We have so much podcast.
I just want to say that it is a Shonda that I have not pulled War Machine yet, even though I can imagine a variety of decks in which I would play him. I've had two fucking collector's keys, and they've both given me shitty-ass variants that I don't need. But all those movies that you suggested for the Pantheon make eminent sense to me. I can't imagine that Matt Patches, of all people, who of course would call The Tree of Life a poem, owns that. I mean, I feel like so many people, you go to 1,000 different letterboxes that are calling Tree of Life a poem. He was definitely there on the ground floor.
They're all, but, yeah, they're all falling into my wake.
But yeah, I do want to veto Carson being in the Pantheon, but I have to respect canon. And I think it has earned its spot, based on the, for the reasons that this listener pointed out, but
the years long running ka-chow joke that we were just like, surely we won't be doing this podcast for over a decade. Anyway, Jeff finishes. You guys are the best. Thanks for all the entertainment you provided. Thanks, Jeff. And those are the emails. You too could have your email read on the podcast. If you email us at fitwr.podcast@gmail.com. But also leave reviews. If we don't have one or either of those, then you'll really hear the Marvel Snap opinions. But until then, let's move on with the show. It's the dream. Well, we've been doing this podcast for a while.
Yeah.
So I guess that means this
we're
of the many
old.
This is the many podcasts that I appear on is worthy of having the story of what the fuck happened to me last week. And we're gonna talk a little bit about that and of course involve the media, because why wouldn't you involve the media?
Turns out that Dave's whereabouts on January 6th have finally been revealed.
Yeah, dun dun dun. Since like mid to late January of this year, I was having what I assume was digestive problems. I really thought I was developing like celiac disease or just had like a bad diet issue. But eventually I was convinced by Java, my loving partner, to actually use my medical insurance and go see the fucking doctor.
Uh-huh.
Thanks to the way healthcare works in this country. Took me like 2 weeks to get to the doctor, went to the doctor. She poked around my abdomen. Didn't seem like the poking was really hurting it that much. So she was like, we'll get you a blood test to see if you're developing celiacs. I also want to do a CT scan because maybe it's like a developing hernia or maybe it's just mild diverticulitis. Diverticulitis is when part of your colon develops these little pockets called diverticuli. You're not born with them, but you can develop them. And exactly how they are developed is sort of medically a mystery at this point. Some people think if you have like a high red meat, low fiber diet, then you could sort of like stress poop your way into diverticuli. Other people think it's like weakening of the wall. It doesn't really matter. It's a thing that can happen to you. Usually happens to people over 40, though. So like maybe this isn't happening to you. They really thought I had a hernia. So once again, thanks to the American Medical Association, I got a CT scan like 2.5 weeks later, managed to get that. Got a call back the next day from my doctor who's like confirming diverticulitis is what you have. Let's get you on some antibiotics. So I went and started taking some antibiotics because diverticulitis is an infection. Oral antibiotic should be what sort of knocks it out along with the change in diet and eating more mild things. But usually if you do that with diverticulitis, the infection goes down, you still have the diverticuli and you get to debate with your healthcare providers and surgeon whether you get to go in and just cut the diverticuli out and sort of repair your colon, and then your diet should be able to go back to normal and you're not
really
under,
quick
like,
question, how much Mountain Dew Baja Blast were you medically required to be drinking at this time?
None. Sugary drinks. Sugary drinks,
Jesus.
Not great in terms of that, but again, no really solid medical science on what causes diverticuli.
Baja Blast can do. Oh.
I mean, it can, but I mean, sugary liquids are not good for you. So, like, basically anything that's not good for your colon could cause diverticuli.
Okay. Good to
so,
know.
That seemed like fine. It, you know, it still hurt. I couldn't really like bend down completely because there was some swelling. So I started taking some antibiotics. One day into the antibiotics, I get a call at like 9 a.m. It turns out my doctor had passed on my CT scan because I guess I had some sort of abscess that was questionable to her. She passed it on to the general surgery department. And they're like, hey, how soon can you get into the ER? And I was like, oh, shit, 15 minutes. And they're like, great, come in now. So I went into the ER and they're like, why are you not in debilitating pain? And I'm like, I don't know. And they poked me again. And the more they poked me, they're like, does this hurt? Like, does this like really hurt? Is this a stabbing pain? And I was just like, no.
This is the opposite of most ER episodes where people go in to the ER with lots of pain and the doctors are like, huh? But in this case, they were like, where's the pain? Where's the pain? And you were like, huh?
Yeah, basically. And I met with a whole bunch of the general surgery team at the hospital I was at. And they're like, your abscess should be causing you a whole bunch of pain. And we're going to admit you into the hospital. And I was like, okay. An hour later, they came back and they're like, well, we had a radiologist look at your CT scan. We can't drain the abscess. There isn't much liquid. And if it's not causing you pain, we're going to discharge you. Come back if the pain gets worse or anything else happens.
But
keep taking your antibiotic. It should knock it out. This almost being admitted was enough to scare Java back from vacation, which I felt really bad about until 2 days later when the swelling got much worse. I started having like a pretty consistent and different pain. Because before, even though the swelling was up, I would only really have pain if gas passed through it. So it would be like a sharp little stinging pain and then I'd fart and things would be fine. So I was like, this isn't life threatening. So I go back in and long story short, they immediately admit me and they're like, this is what we were worried about. They put me in another CT scan and then admit me in the hospital. They come back with the results of the CT scan and they're like, we need to do surgery to take out part of your colon. You're going to have a colostomy bag for 3 months. So that's basically the bag where the shit collects on the outside of your body. So we could clear the infection because my abscess had started protruding through my abdominal wall. Mm. So basically it was trying to spread the infection up into the rest of my chest. And if it had succeeded in doing that and then burst, I would basically go septic and die. But it wasn't doing that. Instead, it was trying to develop what is technically called a fistula. So it was trying to move shit from my colon into my abdomen.
No.
Your body was crying out, more Baja Blast!
Right, essentially. And so I would like a second opinion if we're going to take one of my organs. So I luckily have a friend who's a radiologist and one of Java's family members as a radiologist happened to pass the scans over to them. Java's aunt was like, surgery's the thing, and my friend helpfully responded with fuck that's nasty and didn't really elaborate. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have a colostomy bag. I have to cancel all my travel that I'm gonna do this summer. So basically the idea was they would go in, they would drain this abscess, they would cut out part of my colon. They would take the healthy part of it and divert it to the bag outside of my body and then sort of like tamp off the part that led to my rectum. So I'd just be shitting into this bag for 3 months till the infection cleared. And then they would go back in and reconnect everything. And I was like, okay, there's my summer. That's what I'm doing for 2024.
You didn't really have a choice at this point.
No, because there was one alternate thing, which is they tried to drain the abscess and hope that there wasn't actual shit in it, that it was like some sort of gas, and then later go in and try to repair the diverticulitis after the infection went down. But they weren't happy with the chances of that happening because already the antibiotics weren't doing anything. So I basically needed like a intravenous IV. Anyway, so I was like, fuck, here we go. Let's just do it. Just do it all at once. Like, if I'm going to put my body through this, why would I put my body through two surgical procedures within like a couple of months? Or if we could possibly do it once. So like, let's do it. Let's, you know, live with a bag. I talked to my friend who's a radiologist and he's like, yeah, I hiked a 16er with a that's a 16,000 foot mountain with a guy who had like a colonoscopy bag. It's like definitely livable. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Jesus Christ. That is a real commitment to hiking.
Yeah. So they, well, anyway, they put me under and I woke up without a bag because, as my surgeon later put it, my body did an excellent job at corralling the infection into two specific places.
And that must have been a nice thing to wake up to.
It was a very pleasant thing to wake up to. Not to be like, hey, guess what? You were healthy enough outside of this one little thing. We were just able to cut out the one little thing. So my colon is new, just missing a little section. They didn't even have to take all the sigmoid colon, just part of it. And they took that out, and then they also cut open my abscess to drain it. And while the sort of main surgery thing is healing up fine, I do have a open wound that is going to take like a month to heal because we are stuffing it every day with the bandage so that it heals basically from the bottom up. So it could sort of vent this infection while I'm doing the antibiotic course, just in case the infection isn't killed by antibiotics specifically.
I don't want to make light of any of this, but when you fart, does air come out of the hole in your body?
Or no, I was initially worried about that because if that did happen, that would be bad. Because that would mean that my colon connection wasn't fully connected before I started farting. But luckily, that didn't happen. So I'm
it would be
farting
a little funny, if not life threatening and awful.
I mean, if I tried to fart and it came through a hole in my side, that would definitely be life threatening because that meant something of my digestive tract was venting into my abdomen.
Were you worried about that first fart?
Yes. I would have been.
I was more worried about the first shit because if that didn't come out, that was a little bit more disconcerting. Luckily, on the surgery front, I apparently some sort of weird, miraculous healer man. Because, like, not only did my body sort of keep everything where it was so I could, you know, reconnect my colon, but I've been rebounding faster than all of the milestones to the point where they discharged me from the hospital earlier than they were expecting because statistically, I'm more likely to get infected with my open wound in a hospital than I am at home.
Uh-huh.
So I'm back here, but I can't go to screenings. Because I'm supposed to stay out of large public spaces while I have an open wound in my body, if at all possible. So I'll be home, I think, for another 3 weeks. But considering everything that happened to me, a month recovery is a blessing. And, you know, thank all my medical professionals for making that happen. I was, of course, ridiculous about a few things being in media. Last Tuesday was... while I was trying to decide if I was going to have surgery, I was still holding out hope until they told me I absolutely had to have surgery, that I'd make my Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
This is the most upsetting part of the story to me by far.
And 2 hours before I went under, I sent an email profusely over apologizing to my screening person, being like, I'm sorry I can't make it. I was really looking forward to Frozen Empire.
Just tell me if Muncher's in the movie before I die.
They reply, why?
No, they just replied, oh my God, take your time. And so that was very nice of them. And then afterwards, as I was recovering, they had put me in a very nice private room. And they have a television system in this hospital where my hospital bed had a remote that not only like called the nurse and allowed me to recline and decline, but controlled televisions. So no matter what room I was in, they would plug me into being able to control that television. So it's not like an actual TV remote. It's like this adaptive hospital remote, which means I could not turn off motion smoothing. So I watched one episode of Rick and Morty, and I'm like, nothing is better than this. And I stopped watching anything in my hotel room because
it
was ridiculous.
Do you not have like a
tablet
or a laptop with you or something that would allow you to watch things in a proper frame rate?
I eventually did, but then I was just holding it up in front of myself and would eventually get fatigued because a little while after surgery, everything fatigues you, like walking.
Yeah,
walking around would fatigue me.
Yeah.
But now I'm on the mend. Next Friday, I have a a wound check appointment to check on my open wound. And if that's going well and my antibiotic course has done its job, then I can stop hampering my healing and just do like a tape over. And then I should be all healed up 2 weeks after that is what we're looking at. And, you know, I'll still see everybody who's going to the Austin Television Festival later this spring. I'll see them for live trial by content. I'll see everybody at the Mountain Words Literary Festival if you want to go to Crested Butte, Colorado. So my schedule has still worked out. I'm just going to miss some screenings here. So the podcast will be mostly...
You won't see Civil War. You won't, see the Fall Guy.
Yeah, I just feel like Civil War is not going to cure you. You know, I just feel like you need to do like healing activities, and neither the Ghostbusters nor Civil War really feel like they're going to.
I think I can see the Fall Guy like in release. Like by the time it comes out, I should be healed up enough and patched up enough to be able to see that without affecting myself. But I know that even before I went in, that Matt Patches has had some health concerns.
Oh, don't even segue to this. This is a long podcast. No one wants to crack open my brain right now and understand why.
I mean,
I'm,
you
like,
have you have some
colon cancer.
You have some valid concerns, but I do think your concerns are meeting you exactly at the moment because you're a little bit.
I think that's right. You're a little bit younger than me. Easier.
Yeah, you're a little bit younger than me, and all the preventive thing, like even if I were to have a colonoscopy, they were going to wait until after I turned 40. They were like, "There's no reason unless you're showing something that like." We
but
can't identify
it
through a CT scan.
I mean, this is the reported problem, which, to just trace a very quick line, I started getting really worried about colon cancer when Chadwick Boseman died, and in the last year have seen, like, friends of friends suffer from this, and I'm just really scared about it, mostly because of my own, like, diet and other things that I deal with in my physical life. But then this week, New York Times wrote a report that affirms what's already been chatted about there in the medical community for years, it feels like, but just a big report about like colon cancer hitting younger, like 30s, people in their 20s, but certainly more in their 40s, and like to the point where colon cancer cases were receding in people over 65. Like that was going down, but now it's going way up, like every, like 2% more cases every year since the 90s. And that fucking freaked me out. It freaks me out. I'm definitely going to try and get a colonoscopy. Maybe we should all be pushing them. As Katie noted to me before the podcast, insurance may not cover that because you don't have a reason to go get one. But I don't know, man.
Over 45, everybody's supposed to get them and plenty of people don't. I mean, I was telling you beforehand, like there's a history of colon cancer in my family. I have talked to the doctors about it, but because no one has gotten it before the age of 60, they're not putting me to the front of the line. I don't know if they're going to put you being paranoid also at the front of the line.
What if I bring a copy of the New York Times? Do you think they'll be happy to see me?
New Jersey white man to ever think of that.
There's other slightly cheaper tests. You could start with something like a CT scan that'll at least show you any sort of abnormalities.
There's also a really good at-home colon test right now that the study cites. I think you have to put a poopy in a bag.
An at-home colon cancer test?
Yes, that is supposedly like 98%.
They advertise it on Jeopardy all the time. It's sure like the little white box, ColaGuard, I want to say. It's called.
You put a poop.
Yeah,
in
you
it,
poop
probably.
In a little box. Here's... You send it off to the company, and they
I would want to do it just like if I wasn't
for shits and giggles.
I don't get to send my poop places.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the sort of thing that excites you, I would definitely go for it. I guess a good way to conclude this segment then is they did test since they did. Take part of my colon out. They didn't test it. I don't have cancer in my colon currently.
Hey!
I will have a follow-up colonoscopy at the end of the summer, not only to check again, but to make sure that I healed completely from this experience. That, I guess, good news there. Second news, second part of good news, I'm now 8 days off of everything.
Wow!
No cigarettes, no pot, no beer, I'm changing my diet, and I think that might be it for me and cigarettes. I always said, said if I had a major medical event, that would be
a new
be
era
it.
Begins.
Wow!
So that
there was before Avengers Endgame and after Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, that's
That's basically it. But yeah, I'm gonna try to take this as positively as possible, which is I am hitting all the best case scenarios, and I'm gonna make some lifestyle changes. But also, I've been talking to not only my doctors but my friends about living it up within boundaries. Like, sure, I'm sure my colon would be great if I never ate red meat again, but what would my life be like if I never ate red meat again?
I'm asking a lot of these same questions. I'm with you, but can I recommend a film, Soul Surfer? I think you should check
it out. A doctor, I am Soul Surfer.
And God.
I feel like we're in a real watershed year as three of us prepare to turn 40. Like this podcast, we've seen through so many life changes, and now we've arrived at like the medical crises part of life. And that's not going to be what defines us. Middle age is not only going to be about our doctor's visits. But man, we're putting boyhood to shame in terms of just chronicling the years.
It's my podcast karma for not having kids, but always being on the kids segment. Now I'm the medical one, and we'll figure that out.
Oh, don't worry. One of us will find a way to, right after I turned 35, I started having all kinds of like weird unrelated ailments that are all cured now. But I was like, oh, okay, here we go. I've entered into the many different specialist doctors phase of my life.
Yeah. You guys all got to see me during the period of time where I treated my body like an amusement park, and now you guys get to see what comes after that. So thank you for podcasting with me this long, and sorry if that story was gross, but maybe it'll help you, friends. If you feel like maybe you just had a bad piece of cheese, or your colon's having trouble processing some red meat.
That's when you see three ghosts at night.
Yeah, exactly. A crust of bread. Go to your doctor. If you have health insurance, just go to your doctor. Let them check you out.
And don't force them to give you a colonoscopy if they do not think it is medically advisable.
Why? If you want to pay for it, go for it.
It's my money.
I'm very interested to know what a colonoscopy you have to pay for yourself costs.
Colonoscopy has the good drugs, too. So, that'll be fun.
All right, for our mini segment on a podcast that's going very long, I'm going to do a little summer movie preview. This is the Polygon summer, or the Polygon, no.
Jesus, and segment over.
This is the Fighting in the War Room summer movie preview. And it's going to be real quick, because what I told you guys before the podcast is, here's something I don't do very much professionally. I don't think any of us do. Just blatantly prejudge movies, not close our hearts or maybe open them to things.
I don't even know how. I sit down, the lights are off, I am a blank slate. I've never even heard of
it. I honestly feel that way when I get to the movies, even for, I'll be that way with Frozen Empire one day. I'll give it a chance. But looking at this movie, the summer slate, it looks a bit rough, but I want to know where all of your heads are at. And I'm talking, I'm going to fly through a bunch of titles. I'm not going to do a lot of the indie stuff. I'm not going to cover like I Saw the TV Glow and some of these really little movies that are coming out. There's a new Yorgos Lanthimos movie coming out. I'm not going to cover that stuff. I'm going to do the big, big tent poles, supposedly cultural, like mass audience movies. I want to hear your one word responses, your very brief. I don't want you to go too far, because we are going to open our hearts to these movies eventually. But feel free to feel free to grunt, feel free to cheer. Stand up and cheer moment at the Oscars this year if you feel like it's going to chase the Speed Force. but just say that. I want to fly through a bunch of these. Here we go. I'm going to start in May. When does the... Let me just quickly sidebar. When does the summer movie season start?
First weekend of May.
First weekend of May.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No argument
How
there.
Am I still having this conversation with
because
people?
Because you speak to morons.
In June. Memorial Day. Okay. We talked about The Fall Guy last week. So, David, don't even talk here. Katie, Dave, The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling. Emily Blunt.
Yes. Look at
people.
Let's go. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Another apes movie. We got a trilogy. Now we got a fourth reboot one, and all the humans are running
the
around.
The biggest
what
of Ugs.
Really? The biggest of Ugs?
I am hard like out me. On I'm any like movies me. About monkeys. I do not care. I have never cared. And I certainly don't care
Dave's
now that
into,
West
Dave's
Ball
into,
is in the director's chair.
I'm willing to be persuaded.
Yeah, I'm going to roll the dice on
the
that one.
The death cure didn't...
No, I mean, I will stand for the Scorch Trials, you know, there for the foreseeable future.
The
but
death
still.
Years when you lost interest. Yeah. Tarot. Do you know there's a horror movie this year about tarot cards? You flip them and ghosts come out.
Nope.
Regular tarot cards are a horror movie to me in that you find yourself talking to someone who's like, hey, has anyone done a palm reading for you or whatever? And you're like, Jesus Christ. A jump scare unto itself.
The Strangers, Chapter 1. We're getting three of these movies from Renny Harlin. They were all supposed to come out within like 3 months of each other, too. But for some reason, now we're just getting The Strangers, Chapter 1. Reboot, Invasion. What do you think?
Renny Harlin's 80? Making these?
Yep.
Renny Harlin is directing this movie. Yeah. You love horror movies.
Yep. No, I'm out.
Katie, do you prefer when people break into your house and try and murder you or when monsters come out from under the bed and try?
I can live with monsters better because it is less realistic fear. I'm still never seeing this movie.
Why the Strangers are so scary.
Yep.
If. You guys hear of If? The new Krasinski joint?
Is that a sequel to
It? No. Put it in the wood chipper.
He's describing it as a live-action Pixar movie.
Nope.
If only Pixar had ever thought of
Ryan
making
Reynolds
live
is in
movies.
It. He's making quips. I don't know. The CG looks cool. Back to Black. What do you think? Biopic. This is like the biggest British film of the year.
Biggest British film of the year.
Amy Winehouse. We'll
revisit that claim.
This is the biggest British film of the year.
So people are going to email you. Interested in Jack O'Connell and nothing else. Oh, no, Leslie Manville's also in there.
Yeah, interested in...
That's a bump.
Ringing the death knell for... I mean, it's not actually going to be the death knell because these things are still profitable, but these like ghoulish biopics that are just womb to tomb, straightforward, almost art-free dramatization of Wikipedia
Michael,
pages.
The Michael Jackson version
I don't think
of
anybody's ready for that.
Get casting announcements for every day.
I'm just like waiting for the legal proceedings to begin on that one. Honestly,
I want to watch both of them because I know they're going to make me mad, and I'm willing to
love being mad.
So you've changed a lot since your medical experience, but
it
not enough to not seek out
body.
Things that make you mad.
I mean, yeah.
Furiosa. Now, here's why I was looking on the Smurfs page today. Did you know that Mad Max and the Smurfs movie almost made the same amount of money? Fury Road. Fury Road was not really a big hit in theaters. Yeah. And I can't tell if people give a shit about Mad Max and that they should have made this movie. Like, obviously, Fury Road is pretty great, but is this movie strike your fancy?
Yes, this is the Anya Taylor-Joy desert movie that I actually want to watch this year.
What is the?
What was the other one?
He's referring to Dune,
Dune Part Two.
Oh, Dune. Okay.
She
was on the beach.
Cautiously apprehensive about Furiosa because I do think, you know, as anyone who's seen the other Mad Max movies can tell you, Fury Road is kind of an anomaly. It broke through in a much bigger way than the previous movies for a reason. Not necessarily because it's better or worse, although I personally felt it better. But because it was just a more high octane, you know, wall to wall chase movie that I think had a very low bar for entry and excited a lot of different people. I think Furiosa is almost certainly going to be a slower film. It's going to be less of an action movie. And I think that there's obviously going to be action in it, but and slow is a relative term. But I think that it's going to struggle to scale the same heights. Makes me nervous that expectations might be out of whack. But I do think that Fury Road penetrated deep enough in the culture that it should be fine.
So, Katie, yes, Fury Road, so you're riding.
Yeah, though I think it's healthy for us to all lower expectations because, like, I worry that the Mad Max standard is too high.
Fine, it'll be fine.
I hope it's better than the Apes movie. How's that?
Yeah, it fucking better be.
But not better than the Scorch Trials. The Garfield movie.
What?
You know what? I'm just going to say
I'm
this.
I'm sick
Chris
that day.
Pratt, does seem like a good voice for the Garfield movie. He sounds a lot like Lorenzo Music and Bill Murray from the other Garfield movies. He sounds like it could be good.
Somehow my child watched one of the old Garfield movies at his after school, so now he knows who Garfield is, and now we've seen the preview, so I gotta see this
somehow
one, I guess.
Garfield has returned.
Report.
Why would I care who Garfield's father is? Fuck that movie. I
mean, it's about Garfield's father?
Yeah.
I thought you saw the preview.
I did. There was a lot going on before.
There's like a Garfield family,
started.
And he's on a mission.
I missed that part.
It looks a little dumb. There's a new Bad Boys movie.
Bad Boys
been like split in two filming, and I didn't realize it was like done. But there was a trailer this week, and it's like more Will Smith and Martin Lawrence doing Bad Boys stuff. You guys care about that?
I mean, it's the same directors as Bad Boys 3, right?
It is, but that movie was kind of good.
It was okay. One advantage that Bad Boys 4 has over Bad Boys 3 is that presumably, unlike when I saw Bad Boys 3, no one is going to shit their pants during the screening. That was.
Wait, was this the one that came out like 3 weeks before the pandemic started?
Yes, it was not a child. It was an older gentleman. I was able to, because this is all, obviously all I could think about. I was near the ground zero, and I was able to pretty quickly pinpoint the trouble. Particularly at one point, he exited the theater, and the smell left with him. And I was like, "Oh, finally, I could focus on this movie." And then he came back, and didn't appreciate that.
And you held your nose and went, "Bad boy."
I mean, I was literally there for work and had nothing I could do but sit there and take it. But the perils of being a film critic. But yeah, well, hoping that doesn't happen again. If he shows up, I remember vividly who he is. If he shows up to Bad Boys 4, history repeats itself, I will be very afraid. It'll be like a Final Destination movie.
The Crow remake.
No.
I've never seen The Crow. Is there just one Crow? Or do they do a legacy sequel already?
Don't worry about it.
There's a murder of crows.
There's not a legacy
don't worry sequel. About it. It's like, the Crow movies feel like none of my business. I don't need to start now.
First movie is worth watching, Alex Proyas, but it's, everything else is like direct-to-video level.
I mean,
I'm gonna watch it because it should never exist. It is. I'm surprised they made it here. Yeah, I'm trying to. I want to see what someone was like. This one's good enough. I want to see what that is.
Inside Out 2.
No.
David's very excited, so we don't need to hear from him. he's. You can't even hear his response because he's so high-pitched squealing. That it's out of human.
Yeah. This is going to make David crazy, but it cut to 2 years from now when David watches Inside Out with his kid and gets what's good about it. But my younger child is very into Inside Out. He's also very into like describing feelings and talking about like, wow, did you know you can feel two different ways at once? And it has been like the best learning tool imaginable. So yeah, I'd say Inside Out 2 is like the most highly anticipated movie of the year in our house.
That I'm learning to draw between movies that are good and movies that you appreciate because they make your kid happy and maybe impart valuable lessons. And so while I've thought about this in the context of Inside Out, that there is a distinct possibility that I end up having a more generous take on that movie after Asa sees it. And it, you know, especially if he responds to it, et cetera, et cetera.
Power of a child's smile.
Sure. I am still dreading Inside Out.
I am going to say yes, only because having watched Orion in the Dark and having them try to do the no edges thing so unsuccessfully, I want to make sure Pixar could still pull it off.
This is supposed to be a lightning round, Patches.
I'm trying to go. Okay. A Quiet Place day one.
No.
Nah.
Did you watch the second one? I don't even remember talking about it.
I didn't.
Killian Murphy, Oscar winner. He's in it. But
and Emily Blunt. They then made another movie together that we've heard of.
Yeah,
I think they big time biffed both of those movies, but
from the director of Pig,
but the fact that Michael Sarnowski is directing this, it's similar to Twisters, which I'm sure is on the docket coming up. It's not nothing, but you know, I'm so uninterested in these fucking monsters. And John,
you're right. I gotta keep going. I haven't even gotten to July. Horizon, the Kevin Costner Western.
Yes,
absolutely.
It looks better than I thought it would.
I gotta know. Like, yeah, you can't not.
He put his
I've never watched a minute of Yellowstone, but
I'll give him one. But if he fucks up part one, I'm not coming back.
I think that's fair.
Despicable Me 4? Were you in for 1, 2, 3 Minions and then Minions 2?
I have seen some combination of these movies, but I don't know which ones. And I may or may not wind up at this one. Check back later.
Twisters.
Oh, yes. Hell yes.
I don't know why I'm so ready for this movie. It looks exactly the same
because
as the last
you
one.
You were 10 years old when the first one came out, like the rest of us were, and you're like, yes.
Like, drive away from that story.
Glenn Powell also. We didn't.
No, you ride it, Patches. Haven't you seen the preview? You got to ride that story.
You didn't do Hitman on this because it's coming out on Netflix, but yeah, it's going to be the summer of Glenn Powell. Buckle up. It's going to be fun.
He also produced a Blue Angels documentary with J.J. Abrams that's coming to IMAX this summer. Does anyone know about that? It looks awesome. It looks like real Top Gun.
Did not know that.
That's too
Top
small.
Gun was real. It was a documentary shot in real time.
Deadpool and Wolverine.
Kill me.
Yes.
Nope.
Is this the redemption arc for Deadpool? Are we going to love Deadpool now?
Doesn't everyone love Deadpool? Yeah. Isn't that why they keep making these movies?
Nothing says this is the one, like Sean Levy in the directing chair.
Harold and the Purple Crayon.
No,
you know, Harold,
no,
he was a kid, he got older,
Harold,
has a crayon now.
Kill yourself. Not interested.
Why are people so mad about this? Is it just because Zachary Levi looks weird?
I think people are mad because
Harold,
it's like
kill
an
yourself on the post.
Innocent child story, and Harold, why is lesbians. It for grown-ups? You can't take a kid to this movie. It looks deranged, and Zachary Levi keeps playing man children.
Yeah,
look up Harold and the Purple Crayon camera test. They already came up with a great way to actually adapt the book, and everybody turned it down. So this Levi version, like, fuck it.
Borderlands. Katie, which Borderlands game is your favorite? Or who's your favorite character in the Borderlands video game
franchise? I'm clicking
on
this movie. The Kate Blanchett one looks fun.
Claptrap?
Yeah.
There's a woman in bunny ears?
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes, because this looks like Guardians of the Galaxy 4.
Yeah, I think the trailer is very successful. I'm pro Eli Roth after Thanksgiving. And Kate Blanchett doing Guardians of the Galaxy.
One of the most troubled movies in Hollywood of the last 4 or 5 years. We shall see.
I know that you have inside scoops probably here, but
not really. I mean, this is pretty publicly reported.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, no, I know about that. Well, what was surprised me talking to Eli Roth is that he's like ready to promote the movie. He doesn't feel like he got burned.
He's
here,
also ready to promote
away.
A genocide in Gaza, but that's neither here
okay,
nor there.
That is not a part of this conversation, but I... Go look that up if you're interested. Alien Romulus. We got a trailer for this one, too, Kate, this past week in the trailer frenzy. Big Fede Alvarez doing the horror thing in Alien.
I am extremely excited, but ready to tear it apart should it cross me, because I am a big fan of the Alien franchise. I do not think Fede Alvarez has earned the right to put a spin on one of the director's franchise. I am still really burnt about the fact that we're never going to get the third installment of Ridley Scott's prequel trilogy. And so this movie has a lot to live up to, and nobody wants to love it more than I do. But if he fucks it up,
Katie does.
He will hear from me.
Is this the first horror Alien they've made since Alien?
I mean, you didn't like, find
horror
you didn't think that Alien Covenant was a horror movie?
I did not see Alien.
Well, you are missing out.
AVP Requiem.
AVP Requiem.
Yeah, if you can see the screen, it would be horrifying.
I got to get to the end of the summer. We're so close. We're getting another Horizon Chapter 2 Western in
the
August.
People demanded it.
So we can look forward
Dave's
to that.
Dave's already out.
And the last big movie of the summer, thankfully, is Kraven the Hunter.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Kraven. Now, if you love Madame Web, have you met this man with the
starring boa? Future James Bond, Aaron Taylor Johnson?
So what I'm excited about Kraven the Hunter is figuring out why his Marvel Snap card gives you power for moving onto his column. Like, what about the character makes him so into moving?
Well, he's a motivational speaker, isn't he?
I guess so. I mean, I'm pretty in on Kraven because he was also the villain of the recent Spider-Man 2 video game. So like, I feel like I'm kind of up to speed on his whole deal. But the fact that it's going to be another Sony Marvel movie, that they're going to screen it 8 minutes before the embargo goes up, and then it's going to be stitched together, you know, with scotch tape, does not fill me with a lot of hope.
But what about Russell Crowe is in it as Kraven's dad, Kraven Sr.? Mm. And he's like, hello, Kraven, come here, boy. We want to hunt.
That does kind of entice me, actually.
All right, Kraven.
I'll see.
Most
I'll see
anticipated
it for,
movie this summer.
I'll see it for free. That'll give it to.
And that's it. That's the summer. Get pumped.
I mean, Beetlejuice, really coming in immediately after Labor Day. But I think you're right that
Or is that a pre? That might be Labor Day weekend. I don't know.
It's September.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
we'll get there. We have to clear all that other shit first. Kids on the block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick, and I think it's fly when girls stop by for the summer. I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. I'd take her if I had one wish. But she's been gone since that summer. Somebody who liked it should talk first.
Well, okay, fine. So, Rhode, I just want to set this up really quickly by saying that
please.
The worst thing that happened to Dave Gonzalez last week was not having emergency surgery on his colon. It was seeing Doug Liman's remake of Roadhouse. Dave, you didn't enjoy this film.
Yeah, I you should probably pass to somebody who wants to set up this movie, but it is... another version of Roadhouse, the Patrick Swayze, a camp classic, I guess, would be like the first time I ever saw Roadhouse. Someone described to me the plot of Roadhouse, and I'm like, "Fuck you, that's not a real movie." And then I watched it, and I was like, "Oh, he used to fuck guys like that in prison. This is great. What a movie. But this one is, yes, Doug Liman and Jake Gyllenhaal updating it. We are going to a roadhouse called Roadhouse in the Florida Keys. Jake Gyllenhaal's Dalton is a former UFC fighter who did something horrible in the ring that we'll learn about.
What could it be?
Once we get to act
did
three.
Did he wear pink? Or was it the obvious thing?
probably the obvious thing. But don't worry, this entire movie is plotted very, very breezily for the first half, and then decides to fracture into four different mini plots that all slam together, not with bouncing at a bar, but instead with boats and explosions, because we're here in the Florida Keys. There are elements of this movie that seem important to the plot, like corrupt cops, a previous sort of crime boss who has ended up in prison, leaving his sort of feckless son to try to finish off this real estate scam. There's a subplot about a tree that grows in the middle of a highway that apparently has been abandoned since the filming of True Lies.
I wouldn't say that's a subplot. It's like a metaphor that just kind of skirts along the side of the movie. And
I mean, there's like every 20 minutes he references the little free book he got from the girl who runs the bookshop that is eventually the motivation for him to get very angry. Not because he's getting paid to do a job, but because, you know, they fucked with the bookshop.
You don't fuck with books. He loves books.
The first half of this movie is actually fine because it's dumb and it allows itself to be dumb and superficial. And as David alluded to, it pretends it's keeping secrets, but because you could guess exactly what those secrets are, you sort of allow the character to build in the gaps. But then it spends the second half trying to execute all these simultaneous plots and revealing things about the main character. So like Jake Gyllenhaal, super nice guy, beats up some guys on his first night, brings them all to the ER, gets the nice line from the first one about how nobody wins a fight, conveniently gets stabbed basically where my open wound is. So I'm like, I can relate to this character. He's also told to take his full course of antibiotics. And I'm like, cool. Like, this is great.
Finally, representation. It's me on screen.
Yes. But then the villain, the super, not only is the feckless previously mentioned real estate scammer who apparently lives on his father's boat enough of a villain, they have to bring in Conor McGregor, real UFC fighter, as a sort of way over the top villain, because not only can he not act, his acting is mostly a single pose where it looks like he's making sure his pecs are flexed to the maximum.
As someone who has been sort of Stockholmed to watching his Irish proper 12, you know, Irish whiskey commercial 9,000 times on television, I mean, he is just essentially acting as if he's in a commercial for his own booze. He's like the same affect, the same face. It is kind of hypnotic, I have to say. It doesn't suggest he has a lot of range on screen, but...
There's zero range, and so in order to fill out that he's this weird character, they just make him do nonsensical things. He crashes, like, every car he fucking gets into. He is, like, drinking out of coconuts.
He's tough to use the brake. He just needs to crash into a tree.
Yeah. We're introduced to him being kicked out of an Italian woman's apartment completely naked, and he stops his, like, you gotta come to Florida phone call to, like, assault a man for his jacket. Not his pants, just his jacket. He's not doing a full Terminator. He's doing a quarter Terminator. And then he, you know, shows up and
entire market on fire in the course of assaulting the guy for his jacket. We don't know why.
And then takes a phone call.
Yes.
It's just another day in the life of this guy.
And his character development that I could tell once he gets to Florida is he gets there and he doesn't have a golf club. Then he finds a golf club, and then that's the second half of his character is him with a golf club.
Well, then he just like kind of is the Terminator. Like, he's just like the killing machine who's chasing after Jake Gyllenhaal.
He's more like the Juggernaut, bitch!
Yeah, very, very, very close. Yeah, the wheels really come off this thing, and the thing that pisses me off the most is not Conor McGregor, because someone should have known better than to cast him.
I was going on his Wikipedia after watching this movie. He's done some crimes.
The controversy section of his, no Wikipedia can stand and hold a candle to the controversy section.
Only
of
the
Conor
Tolkien
McGregor's.
Appendices in Lord of the Rings rival Conor McGregor's.
There's a subsection called Wikipedia. Miami Heat related incidents, and then a subsection of two different Miami Heat related incidents.
It was a wild night. It was a wild night.
I'm not even sure they were the same day. I'm going to look this up. Oh, no, they were a day apart. Okay.
The man has four children.
He punched the mascot.
He did.
Am I correct in that? Reykjavik.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's done some crimes. So you can imagine why he was cast in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's the kind of guy you want on your set full of professionals trying to do their job.
I guess. I'm not convinced he wasn't like trying to park the cars in this movie. And this is how Conor McGregor drives the set.
It just crashes everything. And then I saw like a little behind the scenes clip and read some about like this, amazing fight choreography technique where they basically shot each fight like four different times and in post-production managed to put things together between people throwing like full speed punches into bags versus like more traditional stunt work where people are, you know, selling hits through like, faking contact. And all these things, and supposedly the movie stitches all of these things together to make really impactful fights. Unfortunately, I wouldn't know because the lineman fucking shoots this thing to obscure any sort of real contact. It's like we're flying around with no regard for the physics of moving a camera through space. And then every time we're to a point where a punch should land, we're behind it so that the distance doesn't matter. Maybe it is three takes stitched together for maximum impact. The way you shot it fucking undoes all of that. I feel bad for the fight choreographers who came up with this post-production system because it sounds cool, but ultimately it is so much less dynamic than like the first Captain America movie in terms of hand-to-hand combat.
Doug Liman went out of his way to make things more difficult than they needed to be, and the results didn't necessarily reward that effort.
But in a frustrating way, because you don't have to try that hard for Roadhouse. If you're trying to make Bourne, you know, do another pivot in the fucking Bourne franchise, I get it. But like Roadhouse is Patrick Swayze did this perfectly fine. What are you fucking with here? Why are we flying around like we're like in a fucking, I don't know, fisheye lens fly trying to zoom in between like the elbows of people having an actual I'm this movie made me so mad because I wanted fights, and every time the fight would happen, they're like, well, now we're doing it like this. And I'm like, just shoot it like the rest of the fucking movie so I could see some of this actual stunt work. Jake Gyllenhaal looks great. He looks like he's in excellent shape. I really like his tone of the character that he's trying to hit, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense when he gets quote unquote mad and is suddenly an expert on framing cops for murder. But like the actual fighting of Roadhouse made me so mad that I think Doug Liman owes me money.
Wow.
This is where Katie and I have to say our true feelings about this movie.
Yeah.
Yes, please do.
I don't disagree with a lot of what you said. I think Conor McGregor is actively a detriment to the movie, and I do think the back half gets exhausting in all the plotting. Like, I don't need all of that stuff, but I think it establishes a really enjoyable vibe when he first arrives at this bar and you got the bartenders and you got like kind of the trainee bouncers and Jessica Williams, who's like fine, but like is, you know, another like setting an interesting vibe of people who you want to hang out with and you want him to save this bar. Then I think Jake Gyllenhaal is like taking this version of the character who's not it's not exactly like the Swayze performance, but it feels like it echoes with it in some way. It is casual. It is calm. It's not quite the same kind of confidence that Swayze projects. But I think Jake Gyllenhaal is working well with like what he has, like his like teenage, like sarcastic smart kid thing, like fits into this character better than I ever thought that it would. Like him. I like spending time with him. Like the bit of him driving the guys to the hospital who he beat up, like sets
He's
up.
He's a cool big brother type.
Yeah, he doesn't want
to
be
like a really cool guy.
In the big bar fight, which, you know, it's funny, Dave, like it's the CGI of the fights that drives me crazy. The camera work, like I get it's chaotic, but it didn't bother me. But it's where like you can tell that CGI together. But like the big bar fight, I think, has its moments, and where he's like sitting there drinking his coffee, like not wanting to be part of the fight. It's funny. It's a good tone to strike with all that chaos going on. So like little bits of things like that, like what Billy Magnuson is doing is like kind of the weaselly guy. Like it kept
me
going.
Did you like when he got a shave on a bumpy ship?
It was stupid.
That was the hardest thing in the movie to watch.
It was hard to watch. It was a ridiculous thing for any character to try to do, but that's a ridiculous character. And I think he's like selling that aspect of it. So it just had, like, there were things that were better than they needed to be enough that it made up for the things that were worse than I had hoped they would be.
Is that an endorsement?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tepid endorsement, but like, you know, I don't think they'd ever needed to remake Roadhouse. Obviously, the original isn't a class of itself, but I'm not mad that this movie exists the way that it is.
Doesn't seem like it can't be remade.
No, I mean, as Smart Bookshop Team points out, that like it's a classic story of the stranger who comes to town. But
sure.
Yeah, like just make a version of it. Don't call it Roadhouse, you know? Like you can do a version of this story that's just about whatever.
I don't know. I mean, if you can do...
You can
do it in any
city.
Just make
Shane.
Like, this is a good Florida movie, right?
I thought so.
Here, I'm going to list a few reasons why this is an actually good movie. Florida looks beautiful. I can feel the weather. I wanted to be on the beach. I wanted to go to the Roadhouse. It felt like a real set in a real place. And as you said, Katie, surprising camaraderie in that bar and the, like, good extras cast or, like, good supporting performance.
Like the woman
casting.
Who plays the bartender in the Budweiser
yes,
shirt
thought,
who like brings him breakfast. She seems cool.
I liked her a lot. Yes. And she comes alive in the movie. I didn't expect her to like pop up and bring him breakfast at his boathouse. He works at a roadhouse, but he lives in a boathouse.
A houseboat.
I was trying, but I had to make the boat.
I know,
a
but a boathouse is a different thing. It's like a little building you put a boat in.
You're right.
Do you know anybody who rode?
My sister rode.
I think Patches should
be
excommunicated from the podcast. I know it's been like 11 years.
But
I think this is a
that's
crime
true.
Too far.
Like that's a big thing. I like Gyllenhaal. I want to defend the CG fights. Like this whole movie feels like Grand Theft Auto, the movie. I wouldn't be surprised if those games were really influential in the making of this, and that Doug Liman has gone full video game brain. I mean, there's a lot of first person punching in this movie. I like the digital stitching. It just feels strange to me, and the whole vibe of the movie feels odd. I'm glad that it's not just like a direct-to-video Scott Adkins brawler movie with good fight choreography that is clear and just like strong men doing strong things. It's weird to see Gyllenhaal be this ripped and powerful, and it's weird to see the fights concocted in this way, and the Doug Liman like going back to Jumper and Bourne and just moving his camera wherever he wants and like stitch it together later. Like it defies logic because he loves picking up the camera and doing wacko shit. And all of the weird comedic bits when he's beating people up, like great casting, great chemistry, strange comedy. I thought this was the perfect, I watched this on my kid had pink eye all weekend. So I was home on a Friday. I took off. My sick day was really just like
on one screen was Roadhouse, on the second screen was
luckily this was during
Wikipedia
nap time,
opened
like,
to colon cancer.
Just an afternoon movie. I don't get to watch a lot of adult films that the kind of TNT programming that I would have watched in younger days. Like this is just an afternoon dumbass movie, and I thought it was kind of ripped. I enjoyed it more than I was ever expecting to, and I have no reverence as mentioned for the original Roadhouse. Remake it, who cares? But I don't know why this seems so bad or so toxic. People are having such strong reactions to this. I can't really even wrap my mind around it. This is not Madam Web, right? This is not a
no.
this is not Hack Job. Like there's some artistry to this schlocky movie.
Maybe it's the like little bits of art. I mean, is it just approaching good enough that it makes you matter, Dave? Did you see Madam Web?
That's actually the problem with the movie, and like when it tries to get serious towards the end, it's like stop being such a real movie. Like
I just feel like at every step of the way there was a time where I would have been like, maybe we shouldn't do this. From the scripting stage, definitely. To the casting stage, okay. Here's how I want to shoot these fucking fight scenes. It's just like every point, and Dave, movie producer, would have been like, maybe we give this one a little bit more time, or maybe we cook it till everybody feels good about it.
Can't help but get in his own way. I mean, I think if this movie had been directed by somebody who was, I'll use it generously, let's call it ambitious, and was just a little bit more down the middle. A little bit less looking for the secret sauce. And I think, you know, some of his choices pay off, some of his gambles pay off. I think Gyllenhaal's interesting casting, the Conor McGregor though now I'm reading the controversy section of his Wikipedia page and I'm alarmed, is interesting casting. I like some things about this movie, but I do think that its ambition to not just be Roadhouse, which is the mode in which it clearly works best over the course of the first 30 minutes, when it's just, you know, this guy who's ripped to hell and is kind of nice and doesn't want to be violent, but was hired for a violent job, trying to negotiate that. Like, that's fun.
That's a lot more like the original Roadhouse.
Yeah, and then, like, yeah. The shit in the back in the second half just completely not only loses you, but, like, really starts to eat away at your goodwill.
You don't like them blowing up those boats? I thought that was cool.
I like the boats.
Yeah, boats are great. Not enough boat fight scenes and action.
The way they try to incorporate the female lead into the boat scenes is odd, because, like, she's just been like a normal person for a while, and it's like, nah, she can fight too, and you're like, it's okay, like, she doesn't need to be part of this.
So empowering.
They kidnapped my daughter.
Happy
he shows
women's
up
at
the boat.
Month.
Oh no, they didn't really kidnap my daughter. Actually, I did kidnap your daughter. Where is she? Oh, she's down underneath. We won't see her until she's escaping, but we swear she's here.
Her dad, the sheriff. It just feels like we could have skipped. We could have skipped over all of that.
You didn't like Big Dick?
Why did we add that on?
That's right.
Why did we add that in?
Big Dick.
Here's maybe a way to wrap up. We're talking about Doug Liman getting in his own way. Before this movie premiered at South by, when it was kind of announced it was just going to go on Amazon Prime Video, Doug Liman wrote an op-ed on Deadline, lambasting
people do
Amazon
that
for pulling the rug out from under his feet. Like, this movie must be seen in theaters. This is a great audience movie. Everyone's gonna love it. It's like the best movie he's ever made. There were a lot of big claims about why this movie should have played in theaters. To wrap up this conversation, a lot of people hate this movie. Katie and I are kind of warm to it, but I enjoyed watching it at home because it's pretty disposable. Should this movie have played in theaters?
Of course.
Is it better for all movies to play in theaters because all movies should play and be encouraged to, like, send people to the theaters to see these and enjoy them with a community? Or does it hurt movies when movies like this that suck play in theaters?
Does the concept of movies and the theatrical business get hurt by its eventual streaming release?
It's still data shows movies that play theatrically do better when they are available to streaming.
Sure, but that's not what I'm asking.
Recognition. Would there be a stink on it? Sure, but there's also a stink on it by Friday night when the movie premiered directly on Prime Video. I mean, I think that judging by South by Southwest is a charged atmosphere, and the movies tend to go over very well there. People are very invested in loving what they see. But I have no trouble believing, based on, you know, comparing the reaction to people at the Paramount Theater in Austin versus me at midnight on my couch alone, hoping my kid doesn't wake up, that they were having a much better time than I was, and that I would have been having a much better time than I did had I been in that crowd.
I think it should. I mean, I'm not necessarily a fan of getting butthurt and going on Deadline when this is the product. So I don't want to give Liman any credit here. But I do think the benefit of this going into theaters is it's much easier to see the impact of something bad in theaters if you actually have to, you know, pump some money into it that doesn't come back to you. I think, like, the headline, besides the response of people who actually saw it, I was like, you know, 121 million minutes streamed for Roadhouse over the weekend for a 121 minute long movie. So a million people maybe watched Roadhouse. That seems like it's a number that I have no idea how to quantify against things like Amazon Prime. So I would say put it in theaters, first of all, because maybe people who enjoy it would enjoy seeing it in theaters, but also then it's easier to point to the scoreboard and being like, don't let him do this again. Look how you fucking lost money in theaters. It's a lot easier than being like, trusting Luminate's numbers, this failed. That's a lot easier to sweep under the rug. I want Doug Liman to go in director's jail is what I'm saying. So it's easier if it's in theaters and bombs than it is if it's streaming and just nobody talks about it.
I think instead of movie jail, he'll be directing Tom Cruise in space.
I've been threatening to do that for a very long time. So Doug Liman movies
takes a while to get the spaceship
right. Doug Liman movies come together pretty slowly. So don't hold your breath. In space, no one can hear you stream.
Madam Web is about to cross 100 million worldwide, which, like, you know, is not good for a Marvel movie, but that's like $100 million that, like, it doesn't make on the streaming platform.
Yeah. I mean, the streaming economics of, I mean, that's an entirely different conversation, even though I sort of went down the road at the start of this conversation. But the, yeah, I mean, clearly they're losing money to hope to pump up their brand, satisfy the stock market more than actually, like, make liquid cash off of these things. As we saw today, when A Simple Plan 2 was announced to go directly to Prime Video, even though the original made $97.5 million on a $20 million budget and was a rollicking good time in theaters.
People want to see it.
Stupid world that makes no sense.
Come to my platform.
Stupid. I mean, but I don't know why we're talking about this instead of Roadhouse, but like my argument never changes because I. Confident that it's correct.
That's what I was testing. If you have a staunch must go to theaters.
But no, it's just like these movies can all play on streaming after theatrical releases. This is kind of the direction that I see Hollywood trending in over the last year or so. But as we've been saying for a decade now, you treat the theatrical rollouts like glorified advertising campaigns for their eventual streaming release. They allow the movies to make a lot more money. They build a lot of buzz, good or bad, or somewhere in between for the eventual theatrical release. If you think Saltburn would become a sensation to whatever degree that it did on Prime Video without being in theaters first, you're insane. The patterns are clear. And these companies are just shooting themselves in the foot by continuing to do this. I do not know why.
David says, Doug Liman is right. He's great.
Never made a bad choice.
And let bad movies play in theaters.
I think Bad Movie Roadhouse could have played in theaters. I might not have gone to see it in theaters. I probably would have waited to see it at home, which would also be fine.
I
but all of our choices are fine.
Well, you can watch Roadhouse at home because it's on Prime Video now and will be until they remove it. You never get to see it ever again.
That does it for this week. We'll be back next week. I'm going to see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. So it sounds like we're going to be talking about busting ghosts. Find out how much it makes us feel good. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I am Matt Patches. Better at Polygon. I am on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mr. Patches. We have a website, as mentioned earlier in this podcast, of fightinginthewarroom.com. You can go listen to all the old episodes. Go all the way back and figure out how we started this. That is the new mystery. Go find that answer.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm a film critic over at IndieWire. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Letterboxd and Duolingo and Blue Sky and Instagram. And
can I actually find you on Duolingo?
Is there a social component to Duolingo?
I don't know. I haven't used Duolingo in several years. Once my streak broke, there's no starting over. You can read my review of Kong X Godzilla or Godzilla X Kong.
Do
on
we? IndieWire. Is that how we pronounce it?
Has there been like a the
voiceover
X is, trailer?
The X is silent.
The X is
silent.
Silent.
It's Godzilla, Godzilla Kong, the new empire. Yes.
Okay.
If you must.
They keep trying to make this lizard do
no,
Matt.
That's good. To know.
If you want a little preview of how our conversation is going to go next week. And you can leave us reviews on the Apple Podcast app, Fighting in the War Room. We will read them live at the start of the show. You can talk to us about bodily health, yours, ours, things we'd be concerned about, movies, this podcast, really anything you want. Or you can email us. Dave, where can they do that?
You can email us at fitwr.podcast@gmail.com. I'm Dave, semicolon, with a 7. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky and Letterboxd at DA7E. I'm on Instagram as GrumpyDA70. I'm also on the Trial by Content podcast. We're in the middle of doing our Steven Spielberg Trial Royale, trying to discover the best Steven Spielberg movie. So I definitely cried at the end of E.T. this morning. Check out that podcast if that sounds interesting to you.
I'm Katie Rich. You can find me on this podcast. That's the only one I got right now. You can listen to Little Gold Men from this week to find out why I won't be on it anymore, or you can find me on various social media platforms where I explain what's going on and how much I know and how some things I don't know. The social media platforms are Twitter is at Katie Rich, as well as Letterboxd, where I don't think I'm going to write about my employment situation, and on Instagram at Katie Rich Talking, and on Blue Sky, also same place. We're also on Twitter and Blue Sky at FITWR, where you can send helpful suggestions for what I should do with the rest of my life, or you can answer this week's lightning round question, which was,
in honor of Godzilla Kong, the new empire in theaters this weekend, what is your all-time favorite giant monster movie?
Thanks for listening. We'll be back talking to you next week.
I'm done. We're done.